Okay. If you won't tell me, there's not much I can do. No, that's not quite true. Actually, there's an awful lot I can do. We have methods of torture that would normally break a man in less than a day. But you people aren't the kind who gives anything away. And I have the feeling you'd die rather than give me the satisfaction. Besides all that, you've proved yourselves to be exceptional fighters, and we can always do with those in Pleasantville.
Really? You don't strike me as having too much trouble here.
And why do you think that is? Because we fight hard for what we've got, and we fight hard to defend it. And other people, by which I mean other lazier barons who would rather steal than build their own, know this. So they leave us alone. There's a lot of jack and a lot of goods in this ville, and we wouldn't be able to hang on to it if we didn't know how to. You see what I mean?
So what do you want from us?
You don't waste words, do you? I like that. Although I wish you'd waste a few in telling me where you came from and where you learned to fight like you do. So I figure that maybe if you hang around for a while, you get used to us. You may even like it enough to stay. We could always do with people like you and your friends who'd contribute to the well-being of the ville.
He leaned forward so that he was looking Ryan directly in the eye.
I'll tell you what I'll offer you. You can stay in Pleasantville for as long as you like. You'll work for your accommodation and food, but it'll be good work, not crap. I want you to work with Grey Horse and look at our sex strategies, in return for which we learn things about combat from you. If you like it, then you can join his men and stay on. If not, you leave and carry on to wherever you were going. And maybe, if you want, you tell me how in the hell you ended up in the middle of that forest.
Ryan looked at the companions. Despite the rest, they were still battered from the firefight with the Sticky Pack. A few more days or a week in the ville, with good beds and food, would do them a lot of good before they moved on. He didn't trust Ethan one bit, but if they could play along and buy a few days, then that would be worth it. At the moment, they were in no state to stand and fight if they said no, and Ethan turned on them.
Yeah, okay. We'll do it.
Excellent!
Ethan said no more, but had a smug expression as he rose and walked over to his desk. There was a bell push on one corner, and he depressed it. Wherever the other end of the connection lay, it wasn't audible, and it had to have been some distance, for they waited a few minutes before the double doors opened, and two sec men walked in, their blasters conspicuous from their belts, hands seemingly casual, but ready for action. JB noticed this, and he also noticed Ethan make a subtle gesture that relaxed the sec duo.
These boys will clear you out of last night's dorm and find you regular accommodations. They'll also tell you a bit about the ville as you go. Okay, boys?
The two sec men grunted. They didn't seem as though they would be garrulous mines of information. Ethan turned away, his audience with the companions over, his attention already focused on the papers on his desk. Ryan rose, followed by the others, and walked toward the doors where the sec men waited. JB joined his old friend.
I hope you've figured what we could be getting into here. It doesn't feel right.
I'm with you on that, but we can't just leave. Not yet. We'll play along a while, get the lay of the land.
As the companions walked through the double doors, they noted that one of the sec men held back, so that they were led and followed by an armed man. With no blasters of their own, it was an uncomfortable feeling.
We'll collect your stuff, then show you where you're staying. You've been allocated billets around the ville.
You mean to say we're being split up? And that Ethan already had it worked out?
Of course he did, lady. The Baron worked out what your areas of expertise were from what you were carrying and made plans accordingly. He always plans for every eventuality.
Does he now? I wonder what he would have done if Ryan had refused him.
Like Track said, the Baron plans for every eventuality.
They were led back to the dormitory where they had slept the previous night to collect their blasters and supplies, under the watchful eye of the two sec men. Nothing was said, and no attempt was made to take their weapons from them, but all the companions could feel that the sec men were assessing them and the way they handled the equipment, as if sizing them up as future opponents. They left the dormitory and marched through yet more corridors. But these were farther away from the Baron's residence, and the farther they traveled, the more people they saw. The residents of Pleasantville moved freely inside and outside the corridors. There seemed to be nothing sinister about the ville dwellers, who looked at the strangers with curiosity as they went about their everyday business.
Don't they seem any outsiders?
Only ones who are passing through.
They walked outside of the connecting passages and into the harsh sunlight beyond, crossing old roadways bisected by newly hewn paths. The villa was walled off at a visible distance, the forest beyond invisible on the flat landscape as the fortress walls rose. It seemed as though the villa itself was comprised of an old stretch of suburb that had been separated from the remains of the city beyond, and added to with a shantytown of shacks, as well as some sturdier buildings, constructed of salvaged rubble from the ruined city. The small holdings and farmlands that they had seen on their ride in, before weariness had claimed them, had to have lain outside the walls. This made them an easier target, but if the land inside the ville couldn't be cultivated, there would be little option but to depend on outside resources. Farming didn't seem to be their main subsistence, however. The scrub they had seen couldn't support the thriving population that they now encountered. As they were taken into the streets of the ville, they could see that Pleasantville supported a fairly large population, many of whom were trading on the streets or going about their business. Most were pedestrians, but there were some who were using horses, as well as the occasional old motorcycle or wag, carrying goods from one part of the ville to another, or headed out beyond the walls. The fuel and means to run wags and motorcycles didn't come cheap. Ethan had spoken of trade, but it seemed that Pleasantville had something else that kept it thriving. When the companions found what that might be, perhaps they would have some clue as to why Ethan was so keen to find out more about them and keep them in this ville. The companions were to be split up and billeted in different places around the community. This was an obvious ploy by the Baron to keep them from forming a force against him and put them where loyal Pleasantville dwellers could keep a close eye on them. But at the same time, he had also chosen to place them where they would be of the most use. JB was to stay with the Ville's armorer, the notion being that he would add his skills to those of his host. Jack was to be housed with the hunters who foraged the forest for game. Ryan was to stay with Grey Horse and compare notes with the gaunt dreadlocked sec chief on running a sec force. Mildred, who from her belongings was obviously the healer of the group, was to stay with Pleasantville's healer. Which left Christy and Doc. From their belongings and demeanor, it was hard to know what their place in the group might have been. It was interesting for them to see how Ethan had defined them. But perhaps not flattering. Christy had been placed with a trader who specialized in cloth and jewelry, as though he couldn't see beyond her beauty or put any value on her other than that. As for Doc, his roommate was, in many ways, the most potentially rewarding. For Doc had been sequestered with a man named Bones, who seemed to have no discernible purpose other than as the town scholar. Like Doc, his dress seemed a little eccentric, as he wore an old suit that was patched and mended, giving him the air of an office clerk caught in a pre-dark time loop worn by age. His eyesight was also bad, and he wore heavy glasses to compensate. But his task in the ville was obviously one that was important to the Baron. This was something that was immediately brought home to Doc when he was led into the man's house, which was one of the old surviving suburban buildings. It was dusty and crammed full of papers and books. There was also an old comp that was working, blinking away on the man's desk. The house was cluttered with other surviving pieces of old tech, including a camcorder, TVs, old stereo equipment with pre-dark recordings in a variety of formats, books and manuals for the maintenance of this equipment, and a vast library of videotape that took up half of one wall, each tape annotated in Bones' own spidery hand. For here was the true business of Pleasantville.